Have you ever looked up your own number in the telephone book? Do you know there are, in the Minneapolis phone book, 17 pages of Andersons? I've heard various explanations. One is that there are a couple of Anderson manufacturing companies, but I don't think that's the actual reason. Actually, I'm kind of glad about that, not just because it's my own name, but because of the origin of the name Anderson. It actually is sort of a blurring together of two words. It originally was Andrew's son. And it seems to me that anyone who is a Christian should be delighted in carrying on the name of Andrew. Andrew lived in the first century. He was a fisherman by trade. He was very religious, a follower of that fiery prophet called John the Baptist. And in some ways, though, it is rather amazing that his name has carried on down through the centuries, because the New Testament says comparatively little about him. For example, there are no books of the Bible named after him, as there are for Matthew and Mark and Luke and John and Peter. He was not included in Jesus' inner circle of friends, that circle of Peter and James and John, who were invited to the most intimate moments, who sat by Jesus at the Last Supper, who were with Jesus on the mountain when his glory was shown. Andrew wasn't invited. Andrew wasn't there. He wasn't part of any of that. In fact, almost always within the Bible, when his name is mentioned, he is identified as the brother of Peter. And I'll tell you, being the youngest of four sons, I know what it's like to always be identified, maybe you do as well, by an older brother or sister. So every teacher and every neighbor gets your name mixed up and thinks that you are somebody that you are not. But you know, I really don't care whether he was the most famous. I think that Andrew should be remembered most of all for what he did best of all. And actually, I find a delight in carrying his name even at a 2,000-year distance. He is introduced in a place that I would like you to look. It is in the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verses 35 to 42. That's on page 1647. It's in the middle of the story about John, this political and religious first century leader. And it goes like this, beginning in John 1:35. The next day, John was there again with his two disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "Rabbi, where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went and they saw where he was staying and spent that day with him. It was about the 10th hour. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and to tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." And he brought him to Jesus. Now, the very best news in this story is that Andrew followed Jesus. The day he met Jesus was, however, not the beginning of his religious experience, for there is every indication that he was a religious man in a religious country at a religious time. He probably could not remember the day when he did not hear the name of God. And when he became an adult, he was sufficiently interested that when this John became a famous political and religious leader, that he actually left his fishing business, part-time at least, and followed John around and listened to his teaching. You could say that he was regular in going to church and that he counted God to be an important part of his life. It's just that he was not yet a Christian. For a Christian is not someone who grows up in a religious home like Andrew, nor is a Christian someone who speaks the name of God, like Andrew. It's not even someone who has heard a lot about Jesus, like Andrew, for I'm convinced that he had heard a lot about Jesus from the previous teachings of John. Now, none of those things make a person a Christian. A Christian is someone who has met Jesus personally and has made a choice to follow Jesus for the rest of his life. And so that time came. Andrew heard about Jesus. Andrew met Jesus. Andrew decided to check him out. And when he did, he committed to be his disciple. And that was the most important day in Andrew's entire life. I think often how many modern Andrews I meet, men and women, good men and good women, who have grown up in religious homes in America. They tell me that they can never remember a time in their lives when they did not go to church, for as little babies they were carried by their parents. They tell me that there was not a time in life when they did not hear the name of God, nor can they ever remember a time when they did not know at least something about Jesus. Wonderful religious people, just not yet Christians. For to be a Christian requires a personal choice, a personal choice to follow Jesus. Now maybe that's you. Maybe you have a lot of background that is similar to Andrew. And if so, then I invite you to be like Andrew and become a follower of Jesus Christ. That is, to make a deliberate personal choice to be his disciple, to tell him that, to pray, to talk to him, to say, like Andrew did, yes, to the invitation of Jesus to follow him for the rest of life. It is a definite and personal decision, a decision to abandon sin and to live this great and good life that comes through Jesus Christ. If you were to make that decision today, and if you were to pray that kind of prayer to mark it today, then this day would become for you, like that day was for Andrew, the most important and memorable day in your life, so that 10 or 50 years from now, you could look back and say, that was the time. It was February 11, 1996. That was the day that I made the choice to be a follower of Jesus Christ, and it was the most important day in my life. Now, the very next thing that Andrew did after that day was to seek out his brother Peter. Apparently, he was the first person that came to mind. He had met Jesus, and now he wanted Peter, his brother, to meet Jesus. And so John 1:40 says that the first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon. By the way, Simon and Peter are the same guy. In the first century in Palestine, almost everyone had two names. When you were born, you were given a traditional Hebrew name because of the Hebrew language and the Hebrew religion. But because Greek was the language of the empire and because the Romans had conquered Israel, then the majority of people also ended up with some kind of a Greek name. Simon, Peter, same guy. There were two big reasons why Andrew sought out his brother. The first reason was that Andrew was excited about Jesus. The second reason was that he cared. He cared about his brother, Peter. Well, I know it says that the first thing he did was to seek out Simon Peter, but probably because it was the 10th hour, that means late in the day, probably he spent the night wherever Jesus was staying. And I try to imagine what it was like as he had those moments before sleep and he reflected back on a very long and memorable day. He recalled the look in Jesus' eye. He remembers the time when Jesus gently touched his arm. He recalled every word that Jesus spoke. He didn't want to lose them. He wanted to memorize them that day so that that day could live on forever. But he found his mind wandering away from the day's experience, filled with the excitement to who he could tell. Because whenever we have something great and something good in our lives, inevitably we want to share that with someone else. And he began to make a mental list, and number one on that mental list was his own brother, Peter. The Billy Graham Crusade, as you've probably heard, comes for the last time to Minneapolis, St. Paul, next June. 5 days, starting the evening of the 19th of June. It is the 400th-some crusade of this sort that Billy Graham and his team have conducted over half a century. And for most of them, they have had an interesting program that comes on the basis of this story in the New Testament book of John. They call it Operation Andrew. And it is to do as Andrew did. It's to go to bed at night, think through the day, and think about Jesus Christ, and then let one's mind wander to the people who are friends and neighbors and relatives, and to make a list of people like Simon, like Peter, family, and others. Make a list and to pray for each person on that list, and then to seek out the right time and the right opportunity to continue the chain that was started with John to Andrew, who met Jesus, who went and did his first Operation Andrew, and went and sought out his brother Peter, and brought him to see and to hear, and to himself become a Christian. And so those who have led these crusades and do lead this one suggest that every one of us make that list, write it down, and invite some who can come and hear Billy Graham, but more than that, some who can come and meet Jesus Christ. If you think like Andrew, if you fantasize like that, if you imagine, then who would be on your list? Well, as soon as Andrew connected with Simon Peter, he shared his faith. That sounds so easy when it's written in the Bible, like he just went the next morning and did it. Except there are a lot of us who know from personal experience that when it comes to talking about Christian faith to a member of one's own family, to a brother or sister or parent or a child, that that can be one of the most difficult conversations of all. And that is because family relationships are often very complex. They can be so complex that we can't understand them even if we are part of them. That is, in a sense, what counselors often do when there's family counseling. The outsider tries to unravel the complexity of all of those relationships and make sense of it and get through it. And so when it comes to doing what Andrew did, telling about a relationship with Jesus Christ to a brother, for some of us that strikes fear. Fear that if we say, well, I'm a Christian and you should be a Christian, that the answer will quickly be, then why don't you? Or what about the time when somehow we won't measure up to the Christian standards that the family member imagines should be? Or maybe there's a concern that we'll be rejected and some of the most important family relationships of life will somehow be broken, or that we won't be trusted. And so a brother, a sister, a family member can be among the most challenging of people to share one's faith, and yet clearly among the most important. For it is those relationships that help define who we are and those people who are so important to us. That means that we need to learn a valuable lesson from Andrew, the way he went about it. Because we can do precisely what he did. He simply told what he had experienced. It was his personal report of that to which he was an eyewitness. It was no elaborate intellectual argument. In fact, you could suggest that probably he was not as eloquent as his brother Peter. He may not have been as intellectually sharp, perhaps not capable of that type of argument. He did not talk about denomination, and by the way, they had their denominations back then in Judaism, just as we have denominations today. We go by labels like Catholic and Protestant and Lutheran and Methodist and others, and they had their Sadducees and their Pharisees and their other religious groupings within the Jewish faith. He did none of that. Instead, Andrew simply told what he saw and heard. He said, "We have found the Messiah." So there really was nothing to debate. Peter could disagree, he could refuse to come along, he could have nothing to do with it. But personal experience is personal experience, and Andrew probably said those words with a genuineness, with an excitement, and yet normal terms, in a way that Peter was attracted not just to Andrew, but to Jesus Christ, who had changed Andrew through his relationship. I'm convinced that sharing our faith in terms of what we have experienced is by far the easiest and probably the best way. That we say, you know, Jesus Christ has really made a big difference in my life. I pray now more than I've ever prayed, and I know that God hears and that he answers the prayer. I find that, you know, that I'm different. I've experienced God as I've never experienced him before. It's saying, I have a clarity of purpose and direction that I didn't used to have. There's a peace in me that gets me through the harshest of times. Oh, it isn't that I don't have problems. It's that I know that God is there for me. It's I used to be so afraid of what would happen. And that fear is so much less. It's gone. I used to be afraid that I'd get some difficult, terrible disease and I would die. And the fear of death has disappeared with the assurance of heaven. It's explaining my experience that this is something that's different from religion or church. It's this personal relationship with God through becoming a follower of Jesus and then saying, well, this is how it happened with me. You see, to be a Christian is to share that relationship, to share that faith. In fact, there is nothing more important for a Christian to share than Jesus Christ. Of course, Andrew's goal was more than to just say what he had seen. He wanted to introduce his brother to Jesus. So not just tell his experience, but to have Peter also himself experience Jesus. And that's what we want. Do you know that there are more people becoming Christians today by far than any other time in history? The best calculations are that every hour there are 3,000 more Christians in the world than there were before. It's astonishing, really unprecedented. And a lot of studies have been done to figure out how people are becoming Christians. What is it that does it? Is it primarily advertising? Is it primarily reading? Is it evangelistic crusades or church services or books? What is the key? Now, all of those may be factors to consider. But the research shows that 85% of unbelievers who become Christians do so through the influence of a friend. That 70% of unbelievers in the United States, if they were invited to a seminar or a concert or a church service or something else that would be of interest to them, by a friend, they are likely to say yes and to come. It is to say that most Americans become believers through relationships. And so the place to begin in sharing our faith is to have friends, is to befriend others, and to introduce non-Christian friends to Christians, to invite them to something like the Don Byerly faith story. Give them the book and then follow up and say, well, I'll go along with you. Hey, I'd be glad to do that. It's inviting someone to a church activity. It's connecting with other Christians. It's allowing people to step back for a moment and hear what the Christian message is all about, but also to see it being acted out in the lives of real people. It's to hear other people's faith stories and the difference that Jesus Christ has made in the lives of other people. We have found here at Wooddale Church that when those who have not made a commitment to Jesus Christ start hanging out here with other Wooddalers, when they come to church services and activities, when they hear the Bible taught, that typically within about 6 months, people say, yeah, that's for me. I too want to be a follower of Jesus Christ and make a decision to become a Christian. When you sense that that friend is ready, who knows, you may be the person who can say, here's how to do it. It may be faxing a prayer to someone and saying, why don't you pray this prayer? It may be telling them what you prayed when you made the decision to become a Christian. It's saying something like, God, you know I need help. I know that I'm a sinner. And I'm just going to accept Jesus Christ and trust him to forgive my sin and to make him the Lord of my life. And then to help that person grow spiritually by encouraging Bible reading and prayer and Christian fellowship and church involvement. Now, I know for a lot of us that's kind of scary. You think, whoa, you know, this is getting kind of heavy. That's for somebody else. But I think the whole point of God giving us the story of Andrew is that he was just an ordinary guy. He was not brilliant or articulate. He was just regular, an ordinary person who became a Christian and helped other people become Christians. And when he did it, it sort of whetted his appetite so that he kept doing it and doing it. If you read the rest of the New Testament Gospel of John, you find that while Peter, his brother, was his first, he was certainly not his last. He liked it so much that every other time in John that Andrew's name is mentioned, every time he's introducing someone else to Jesus. So, for example, in John 6, it's the story about Jesus teaching. Thousands of people came to lunchtime. There wasn't a McDonald's or a Burger King in sight. All these people were getting hungry. And Andrew found this boy who thought ahead far enough to bring his bag lunch with fish and bread. And said, you know, it's not much, but Jesus can probably do something with that. And said, come on, I want to introduce you to the teacher up front. And brings this boy and introduces him to Jesus. Jesus takes this small lunch, multiplies it out to feed thousands of people. One of the greatest miracles in the Bible in all of history because Andrew introduced him to Jesus. You read on in John 12 about some Greek tourists who heard the news and found out that Jesus was there and decided that they wanted to meet him. So they started asking around, and Andrew said, oh, you want to meet Jesus? Hey, I can arrange that. And so he introduced these two Greek tourists to Jesus. I begin to realize that if every story about him has him introducing somebody else to Jesus, sort of fitting in with the circumstance, going with the flow, but sharing his faith, then he must have been doing it all of the time. And I begin to wonder, what if hundreds of us did exactly the same thing? What if thousands of us did that? What if it multiplied? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great for God? And wouldn't that be great in the fabulous benefits to those who would meet Jesus Christ? That we all be Andrews? That we follow him and that we find others to introduce? That we pray every day for those people specifically? That if we don't know who they are, that we ask God through prayer to give us some ideas. If we don't know what to say, that we simply say, God, you're going to have to tell me what to say because I don't know what to say. If we don't think that there's an opportunity, we say, well, God, then you make the opportunity and I'll be glad to take it when the opportunity comes. It's inviting somebody to church or to the Billy Graham Crusade. It is that we be modern Andrew. That we take the best that we have, Jesus Christ, and that we share him with others who need to know him as well. In some of his final words, Jesus said, go and make disciples of all peoples. So our benediction for this morning is, go! The theme of our service this morning centers around sharing faith in Jesus Christ. Now, our faith story on almost every Sunday morning is about that, either about people coming to faith in Jesus Christ or sharing that faith with others. But usually, it's one individual telling one story. This morning, it's different because it's two individuals whose story of coming to faith in Jesus Christ connects. And so, our faith stories this morning are from Brenda Johnson and Lincoln Ong.
At the age of 6, I accepted Christ as my personal Lord and Savior. I was raised in a Christian home, attending church activities several times a week. I grew up a very happy child and thought this happiness was just me. I never knew life without Christ, and I never equated that my happiness was because I had Christ in my life. After high school, I attended a Christian college for 2 years. I then moved out of state to complete my education. And it was at that time I decided to follow my selfish dreams of having a wonderful career and material gains. I put my relationship with Christ aside, and that was the worst decision I ever made. It was the beginning of a very long and painful journey, and without a doubt, the most miserable and empty years of my life. I began searching for the constant joy and peace I had once experienced growing up. During the search, my family members would urge me to get involved with church. My response would usually be, "You think I have time for that, with all the responsibilities and problems I have?" 6 years later, after all else failed, I reached bottom and finally gave myself to the Lord completely. I was immediately filled with an indescribable peace and joy and happiness. My life completely changed, and it did not go unnoticed by family, friends, and coworkers. Everyone I knew was questioning what had happened to me, that I was such a changed person, happy and finally at peace. I was so blessed with this perfect opportunity to share my faith with them. Since I rededicated my life to Christ, I pray daily and give myself to the Lord completely for him to use in whatever way he can, and also for the strength needed to do what he wants done. I don't know what I would do now without having Christ at the center of my life, leading me every step of the way. I'm amazed at the desire and strength God has given me to share my faith with others. I know that the confidence I have in doing this comes only from Christ. I get so excited when someone asks me about Christ or shows an interest in getting to know why I have so much joy, because it opens an opportunity for me to share my faith with them. One of the first people I was able to do this with was my boss and friend, Lincoln Ong.
I learned of God since I was a little boy. I was taught what is right and what is wrong by my parents and by the missionary school I attended. I knew of God, but I did not know him personally. I prayed to God only when I needed help. As I grew older, I developed doubts about Christianity. Later, as an adult, I doubted that Christ was the Son of God. From then on, it was downhill spiritually. I was a reasonably successful young man, an adult, having achieved success in sports, in academics, profession, and business. What this did to me was to develop in me what you often hear as self-esteem, confidence, and a lot of pride. The worst of them is pride. What pride did was to tell myself that the teachings of the Bible was only for Christians and did not apply to me. I would develop my own philosophy of living as I saw fit. I was so proud, I thought I was a pretty good guy. Clean cut, didn't swear, didn't get drunk, didn't kill. But that was because those were not my sins. And therefore, I could say with great pride and holiness that I really was okay. And as long as no one was hurt and God did not count, it was okay. It was more important that one adhered to the law of the land. Then I met Brenda. And I think the Lord sent her to minister to my humility. Brenda sensed that I was unhappy. I had no peace and no joy, just transient satisfaction from materialism. She gave me a Bible which I thought would collect dust, like my first Bible. I talked to her about my unbelief and that I did not think Jesus was the Son of God, a prophet maybe. Before I could say Jack Robinson, she gave me Josh McDowell's book, More Than a Carpenter. Reluctantly, I read the book. Josh's argument that Jesus is the Son of God were convincing beyond a doubt. No sooner had I finished the book while in Singapore on business than Brenda faxed to me the sinner's prayer. I was alone in my office that Saturday when the fax arrived. In the quiet of the office, I thought of God and Jesus, and then I said the sinner's prayer and accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. With me, there were no flashing lights, no fireworks. I told Brenda by telephone that I had accepted the Lord into my life. She cried on the telephone, and I think almost shorted the system with her tears. That was 16 months ago. I started to read the Bible and have not stopped. My life has not been the same since.
Oh, man, what in the world was cooked? Or rather, burned in here? Those cooks get paid 4 times what I get paid. Totally unfair. What a stinking job this is. Wait a minute. It's toxic waste. Oh, kill it quick. Die, scum, die.
Is it Dad?
Huh? Oh, yeah. I mean, no. Oh, it's been a long night.
Boy, I'll say, but those extra hours will sure come in handy when tuition fees are due.
On what they pay me, I'll be lucky to pay the phone bill.
Boy, somebody upstairs sure had box tonight. There were roses on every table, and there was an ice sculpture of the bride and groom, and there must have been a 12-piece orchestra playing, and the music was incredible.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, yeah, that must be a real drag being stuck down here when everything's happening upstairs.
What are you doing?
I think this is called a fry pan.
I know, but why are you doing that?
Well, we were done upstairs, and I just decided to come down here and see if you needed some help. By the looks of things, you do, am I right?
Well, yeah, I guess. But it's not your job.
Well, the way I look at it, a job's not really done until it's really done. Right down to the pots and pans.
Oh, that one's done.
It is?
Yeah. I swear, whatever it was they cooked in there, they must have blowtorched it right to the bottom.
Hmm. Looks like the Swedish meatballs, I think. Oh, they looked a lot better up there. Oh, but... Oh, and they smelled wonderful. I really wanted to ask one of the guests if I could try one.
If you wanted a meatball so bad, why didn't you just swipe one off someone's plate before bringing it out?
I couldn't do that.
Sure you could. I do it all the time, except I'm trying to stay away from red meat.
Is that a more serious crime in your eyes?
Well, no, it's just bad for your heart.
Well, so are stealing.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Well, actions speak louder than words.
Oh, great. Now she's quoting the Bible.
Oh, it's a Scottish proverb.
Oh, that's a relief.
Why is that a relief?
It's just that I'm tired of all those people on campus who come up to me and throw Bible verses in my face and then pretend like they're so much better than I am. It's just that, well, that really bugs me.
Oh.
Yesterday, I'm riding my bike and this guy jumps out in front of me. Well, I nearly kill myself trying to avoid killing him. So when I'm picking up my bike up off the street, he says to me, "If you died today, are you sure you'd go to heaven?" I felt like saying back to him, "How about if I kill you now and you tell me where you wound up?" Man, I hate that preaching stuff.
Oh.
I think as long as you find good stuff to live your life by and you do good things, well, then you'll be all right in the end and go to heaven and all.
Well, first of all, it's by grace that we're saved. By faith, not from ourselves. And it's a gift from God, not by works.
I think I've heard that proverb before. German?
It's from the Bible, in the book of Ephesians.
Wait a minute. Are you a Christian?
Yeah.
Oh, man, do I feel dumb. Listen, I didn't mean all that stuff I said. It's just that, well, you seem different. I mean, helping me out here and all. I guess it's the way you say it. I didn't really mind hearing it from you.
Maybe it's because I didn't jump in front of your pots and pans?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I'm glad. Jerry, I truly believe that God has a plan for everyone's life.
And mine is to be a dishwasher?
From the way you wash dishes, I don't think so. But if you trust in him and seek him, God will show you his plan.
Hey, there's an awful lot of yakking going on in here. Let's get to work so we can go home. Melanie, I need your help with the invoice for this reception.
Oh, okay. Be right there.
Do you think maybe we could talk more later? Maybe get something to eat?
Yeah, I'd like that. I was praying I'd get paid tonight so I could order a pizza.
Oh, shoot, that's right. I'm out of cash, too.
There's all kinds of food left over in there. Meatballs, onion rings, cake. Help yourself to as much as you want. When you're done.
Don't say it. Good things come to those who wait. I suppose that's in the Bible, too.
Specifically, but it does say, "They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength." See you later.
Yeah, later.